Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. And we have a little bit different program direction we're going to go into today. I do have some guests, and we've had such an overwhelming response in emails that, well, I mean, it covers like the gamut from the bedroom to the boardroom, even up to the skies. So I will have a guest, Celine McLean, who, well, also she goes, her stage name is Holmes, that she goes, the award-winning screen and theater actress, who will help me decipher some of these crazy, perplexing, and some of them really outrageous emails. So without ado, Celine, I think I messed up on your screen name. So would you please reintroduce yourself? I do apologize.
Oh, okay. Well, my stage and screen name is Celine McLean, and then my married name is Celine Holmes. So, and also I'm an attorney, and I'm licensed under Celine McLean, so...
Oh,
some of that
okay.
Stuff you couldn't change once you got married. So,
I guess because you're under SAG or Actors Guild, you usually go by what you're known by on in your film and feature films and your Broadway, your off Broadway shows. Is that correct?
Yeah, and once you get the name, you want to just keep the same name basically and not confuse people. And also for the unions, if somebody else already has your name, you have to come up with a different name. So luckily Celine McLean was obscure enough that nobody else had it when I joined. So.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, it seems like we had like two guests planned, but it seems like one who's a commercial international airline pilot, he's over a rough stretch of turbulence, and he's not going to be able to actually answer the question, but he was nice enough to give me the information for me to dispel it over the air as much as I can without being... Oh, that's right. We're not FCC. Okay, that's good. Okay, so...
Ooh, I can't wait to hear.
So, whenever you're ready with the first question...
All right, well, it sounds like you've got some interesting questions here. And the first one, the person writes in saying, I consider myself lucky having good coworkers and friends, but it seems there's one coworker who seems to agree with me, but sets me up for embarrassing falls in front of my boss and colleagues. I recall vividly those moments when my encounters and conversations made me feel stupid, offended, fearful, and even sick, especially sick when one of my own friends will also pull the same ploy. How should I appropriately handle this, especially in the workplace? And she signs it, thanks, Beth.
Oh, wow. Beth, I'm sure she's not the only one that has ever experienced that, especially without getting too metaphysical or quantum physics. I mean, we all bodies are made up of energy, and the energy exchanges between people, it happens all the time, but it's usually below our conscious radar. And in a good relationship or in a relationship, period, there are exchanges of energy. Well, when you have a good relationship, you have a relationship where it's with respect and dignity. But then there are those relationships that tend to bring you down. In the workplace, we tend to call that toxic energy. And as a matter of fact, they've done a lot of studies, and toxic energy, people that, whether they have jealous motivations or they insecure, or they just the Debbie Downers, whiners, you name it, short temper, gossipers, whatever, they do this, and they tend to reduce productivity in the company, and there's actually more sick time, and there's a lot of loss with money. So when you think of it like that, that you wonder why you let somebody take your energy. And these people are usually termed as an energy vampire. And yes, they do exist. I'm sure if you've known a few people, especially being in the you know, the acting world, people that will backstab you in a heartbeat too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you don't want to name any names, of course, but I like that term, energy vampire. That's great. It's very, it gives me a great image.
Because think about it, you know, all relationships, there's always an exchange of energy. People either what? They either lift us up or bring us down. And it's up to us to figure out, you know, do we really want to be around those certain people? And a lot of people tend to, like, negate them and just shut them out of your life. But when you're working in a business atmosphere, or even if it's your mother or father, you just really can't do it. It's not practical unless you want to lose your job or your inheritance, whatever, you know what I mean. But and then some people say, well, just suck it up and be a bigger person. But there are some things that you can do to encase yourself away from this, because look at it. I mean, people that are nurses, ministers, people in the health practitioners, they allow a lot of people that have negative energy, whether they're sick or emotionally depressed, and yet they still seem to uplift other people, and they find ways to be able to keep themselves uplifted themselves. And there's a lot of different things that you can do. So, Beth, I would suggest for you to take a deep breath, let it go, and don't allow the words or actions to linger and take up your space. You're letting that their energy take away from you. Then I would recognize that what they're saying is unacceptable. You don't really have to give them permission to leech onto your energy. Keep things light and change the focus. I would even think, you know, like, be nice to them and give back to them so that maybe you can help replenish their energy. And then remind yourself that the purpose of the bond and the connection, why are you really associated with them? And are you willing to walk away? I mean, are you willing to walk away from that, you know, six-figure salary just because of one person that seems to, you know, get under your skin? And then I would say take a step back by putting their words and action into perspective. What is their behavior? Maybe it's just a negative outcrying for their specific needs. Again, like I said, maybe going towards them and seeing what they might need in their life that maybe you could help become a positive energy flow for them. And then I've learned this a long time ago that you always, like I said, I'm not into New Age and stuff like that, but it's always good to visualize yourself in a protective light, like an energy shield. And this gives your mind and body in an empowerment focus, like you really doing something to protect yourself. And then I would say, Beth, the last thing is affirm your self-worth. You know that you deserve you to be surrounded by the best, the most positive and genuine and caring people that respect you and your dignity. And from there, I think just keeping a sharp eye for those people that tend to drain you and make you sick. I hope that helps, Beth.
Well, that sounds very helpful. I hope she's listening in. An energy vampire. Maybe also wear some garlic and a crucifix, or no.
I mean, people think, you know, I mean, vampires, you know, just exist under the heading of blood suckers. But I mean, there's energy suckers. You know those people. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You could be having a wonderful day, and they say, "Oh, you look like you're sick today. What's the matter with you?" You know.
Gee, thanks. Yeah.
Right.
So that's
exactly.
Very useful. So, shall I go on to the next question?
Sure.
Okay. The next question, I'm interested in hearing about this. I hear you have a commercial captain answer a question we may hear about in the airline industry, but never know its origin. A writer from Salem, Oregon wants to know about the Mile High Club.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious? Okay. What does he want to know? You see, this was when my special international commercial captain was going to come on and kind of take the redness out of my face right now.
and thank goodness it's radio, right?
Right, and it's not FCC. So, first and foremost, I'm going to give you a short little thing because we're probably going to be going to break in about 2 minutes. But first and foremost, he wanted me to point out that it is not FAA and as an international or as a commercial pilot, it is totally frowned upon. It is not recommended. In fact, it is a serious, serious danger hazard. And that's one of the reasons why, especially where they keep the seatbelt on, even when you're flying, so that because of the incidents of turbulence, it's a very, very safety. Number one, safety hazard. Number two, it's very, you know, unsanitary for the other passengers. And number three, it's just plain rude. And so he wanted to make the point that nobody in the airline industry, in the commercial airline industry, actually, you could get in a lot of trouble. I mean, you could be cited when you landed. You could be walked off with handcuffs. But depending on how bad the situation is. But anyway, those are the first most important things he wanted to say. And when we come back from break, I will tell you what he told me is the first origin of the Mile High Club. For those that wanted, the ones that wanted to know in Salem, Oregon, thank you. We'll be back.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier? Especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I'm back with Celine McLean, And she's helping me go through a gamut of some outrageous, some very thought-provoking email questions. And just to give you a brief summary of her again, in case y'all weren't on the earlier show, she's an award-winning screen and theater actress, and she's going to help me go through these questions. We were just leaving off. We were supposed to have a guest on, a commercial airline pilot. He was asked about the origins of the Mile High Club in the airplane, even though that's not the bedroom or the boardroom, but I guess it still could fall in that category. Anyway, first off, it's frowned upon in the FAA and all commercial airlines. So we coming back to know exactly the origins of it. Okay, you probably guessed that, you know, you would think maybe the first Mile High Clubs were those dashing young pilots, maybe back in the 1920s, maybe around, with Hugh Hefner around that, not Hugh Hefner, I'm sorry, I can't think of his name, Solene, who, you know, the one,
I know who you mean, the one with the Leonardo DiCaprio played him.
Right, okay. Yeah, and then back like in the 20s, they had these big stunt pilots, these good-looking guys, that they did crazy stunts like play tennis on the weird wings of airplanes. Yeah. But really, 1920s, you'd be way off, like by a century and a half. And it wasn't as a man. As soon as the very first woman took to the skies, people started having ideas. And it's not just the skies, like, one of the Wright brother planes or anything like this. People tended to go back then, before they had the Wright brothers, they had the hot air balloons. And back then, that was in the 1700s, believe it or not, which was equivalent to the stunt pilots crossed with celebrities. I mean, they had to find a way to entertain themselves, I guess. So huge crowds attended these launches, and people composed poems, stories. They brought their memoir. I mean, it was something that they even tore across their clothes as souvenirs. This was something new, daring, and exciting. I mean, got to think about that. I mean, and if the 1920s were wild, I mean, what did they do in the 1700s? Well, so this is what they did. So each new flight, of course, like every movie or everything, everybody has to do bigger and better stunt and up one by everybody, right, to make, you know, get the headlines out and get their publicity going. So there was a man named Vincenzo Lanardi, and he had one of these big stunts cooked up. And Lanardi and a daring young aeronaut named George Biggin were going to launch in London, and they were going to do so in the company, get this, of the first woman to go up in the air. Well, they really didn't think this through, but they thought it was a good idea. And her name was Letitia Sage. And guess what, Celine? She was an actress and a celebrated beauty, of course.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they had to, you know, make this, you know, soup over the top. Okay, so the balloon they were going up in had a special basket. And they had, like, this lavish picnic lunch and pillows and curtains and a tableau set. Well, on the other side, because, you know, the clothes the woman wore back then were kind of, well, I can't imagine getting in a balloon with all that paraphernalia the women had. So they made like a little green drape so she could crawl in where they would just shut it. So they opened it up, and they saw she and Mr. Biggins in there, and just they were getting ready to, they were still tethered. And well, one thing they forgot to ask Miss Letitia Sage was, and back then, if you recall, women were a little bit more, let's say, on the heavier side. And she admitted to be about 200 pounds.
Wow.
Because, I mean, the women back then, they were, the bigger they were, the more voluptuous they were. And plus the weight of their dress. Make a long story short, that the basket didn't get up off the air. It came tumbling down, and when they landed, they were on top of each other, and the curtain flung open. And then the way the story goes is, I mean, they both to the very end said nothing happened, but the people on the ground said it looked a little bit more, let's say, a little bit more scintillating than what they'd commented upon. And then the idea sparked a revolution in thinking. From then on, balloon enthusiasts, they bet each other, because they still had to outdo each other, as to whether anyone dared to have sex in a balloon at a certain number of feet and off the ground. And thus, the Mile High Club was born. Now, who...
Wow. Spicy.
I know. Who would have thought that? I mean... but now my anonymous captain did want me to say that for those people that do have the desire or wanting to do that, you actually can join a club for a certain amount of fee, and it's just strictly an airplane for that. Maybe it's like a Gulfstream Learjet or something like that, that you belong to the club and you can actually do that. So there's a little bit for everybody out there. Hot air balloons, no commercial, but you can always join the, you know, private Mile High Club. So I'm sorry, he probably could have given a lot more descriptive information about the times that when they had to catch somebody red-handed. Well, should I say red-handed? I don't know. Anyway... when they caught somebody. So I hope the people, the person from Salem, Oregon, that might create a creative spark in their minds. Because I think they do have in Oregon a balloon festival.
Yeah, who knows what's going on there, right?
I don't know.
I never would have guessed, but now when I see a hot air balloon, I'm going to think twice.
Okay, that's true.
Oh, and it was Howard Hughes, the pilot from the 20s, the Leonardo DiCaprio played.
Howard Hughes, that's right, right.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, you would think, if anything, I mean, somebody would think that with all the wealth and money and stuff like that, that, you know, especially during that era, that's where it came about. But now, I mean, it was pretty much revelation. And find out that that's how it was created.
Yeah, I wouldn't guess that. Wow. Well, do you want to move on to a less scandalous question?
You want to go from something polite now?
Maybe from the bedroom, a little bit back to the boardroom, or from the hot air balloon to the boardroom.
Okay.
So after hearing your show, great job, I was looking at your website, http://theprotocolpraxis.com, and I saw that there are 7 magic words I should use in my daily life to foster dignity, respect, and power. What are these words? Do they work in both the boardroom and in the bedroom? How should I, can I use them in my everyday life? And this is from Respect Me in White Plains, New York.
Oh, wow, Respect Me in White Plains, New York. Well, I mean, to answer your last question first, showing anybody respect and dignity, you're going to get usually the same thing back. It's almost going back to the energy vampire. You give what you get. And the 7, I mean, they might sound so... simple, but when you use them in context of leadership and even in relationship, it's about not being an individual. It's about making decisions as a team. It's about not having all the answers, but being able to find the answers together. So the biggest thing is to, you know, to include the word we. The worst word is to use I did this, or I can do that, I this, I that. So it's best to always include somebody with the word we. And I like to always throw this into it. You use the person's name. The most magical thing to another person's ears is the sound of their own name. So when you say, oh, can we marry, can we go work on this project together? You're going to get a lot more cooperation and a lot more respect when then you just say, well, let's go, we ought to do this. Okay, the second one is to admit when you don't know something and say, I don't know, but having the willingness to say, I will find out. You're not expected to know everything, but being able to have the capacity to find out is something that is very respected in business and even in a relationship. You know, well, honey, I don't know where the finances went, but we'll find out and I will do it. And then always, you know, it's best to say, to own up to mistakes, you know, and say, I was wrong, or I didn't understand, but just own up to it. And number four is to always thank the other person. Thank you for doing such and such, and adding, you did a great job. And then the sixth one and the seventh one is the magic words, please and thank you. You never can go wrong, people. It's just so much more, the civility and more shows that you have more care and respect for them. So it looks like, Celine, we go on to break, and just remember to use, to knock out that word I and use we in the name. And I think thank you and please, and you're welcome, and you'll be off to a good start. And so we'll go to our next question back from break.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they move forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you figured out what's not working in your business and why? Could you use a little help? Join your host, Tamaran, for Let's Figure It Out Intimately. Tamaran was struggling with the same issue, so she hired other business coaches and experts to help her see what she couldn't. Her journey is to keep learning, and she is here to share this with you so that we can all keep working together. Let's Figure It Out Intimately. Airs live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, y'all. I'm saying y'all because we're going from the bedroom to the boardroom, and we were up in the air, and now it looks like we're going out into the streets with our next question Celine has for me, and we're going to be introducing an exciting guest to answer it just for this one question, two question, and maybe possibly three. Okay, Celine.
All right, the question is, Suzanne, after hearing your episode with guest Joyce Smith, I really want to come to New Orleans for Mardi Gras next year. I've always heard that it's a bit of a free-for-all. I'm wondering if there are any rules that I should abide by. Do the police care what I do? Also, do I have to wear a mask? And that is from Raring to Go in Farmington, New Mexico.
Oh, wow, Raring to Go. You're going to be really going when you come down here. So my guest here is Vatican Lokey. And let me introduce him. He's an award-winning stage actor and TV personality. Mr. Lokey is also the creator of Mardi Gras historian, get this, Professor Carl Naval, like carnival, haha. As the professor, Mr. Lokey is an expert on all things Mardi Gras, and he regularly appears as a guest on WWL TV Channel 4 during carnival season. Welcome, Vatican. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Celine. I'm doing beautifully today. We're enjoying a little bit of rain here in New Orleans, which is taking the temperature down considerably. So we're in good shape.
I'm feeling the same. It seems like the pilots are doing the same. I have a quick question before we begin.
Of course.
I love your name. I was just, having this curiosity, wanting to know, where did Vatican come from?
Well, the short answer to that question, and I have been asked that question repeatedly in my 46 years, my mother is Episcopalian, my father was Jewish, I was born in the middle of their divorce, so she named me to tick him off.
That's hysterical. I guess it did.
yes, but I have an excellent stepfather that I grew up with, so that's all. That's how it came about.
That's great. I love that. So how would you answer? Mr. Professor Carnaval, what do you say about informing a newbie coming down to New Orleans for Mardi Gras?
Well, and addressing Raring to Go's comments and Raring to Go's question, yes, there are laws that you do have to follow, just like you do at home. Now, the police are not going to, if they're looking out for everyone on the street, there may be a couple of things that might happen that they might overlook because it doesn't pose a threat to the general populace. But people who believe that they can come to New Orleans and throw their shirts up over their heads and whatever other article of clothing they can locate to put up there in exchange for beads in the street and get away with it are usually sadly mistaken. There are laws that you do have to follow while you are here, and most of them are common sense laws. Don't get in the way of the parades. Don't go running around the streets naked. And basically just don't come here expecting that it's going to be free-for-all. A lot of people, when they come to New Orleans, it's like they're going to a theme park. They sort of turn their brains to the off position, and they forget how to behave.
Well, everybody sees, Bourbon Street where the girls, they get beads for lifting up their shirts. Is that
I would like to point out, though, Suzanne, those people that you see on the evening news doing such things, they're not from New Orleans. They've come from out of town to do this.
Oh, and is that the only place they can do it? Can you do that on the parade route?
No, absolutely not. I believe there was also a question about masking.
Whether someone had
to wear a mask for coming to carnival. It's not necessary for you to wear a mask, but it's encouraged. When everyone participates in carnival and in Mardi Gras, everyone has a much better time. The only people who are required to wear masks in Orleans Parish are the riders on the floats. They must be masked at all times.
And is there a reason for that?
It's to preserve the mystery of carnival. A lot of people don't know that there's actually a very long history of Mardi Gras and carnival here in New Orleans that goes well past the superficial joys of a great big party. I mean, New Orleans is the greatest free show on earth, but there's over at least 150 years of history that is connected with the celebrations. Going back to the beginning of modern carnival in 1857 with the advent of the Mystic Crew of Comus. And that history is a great, great big part of our cultural heritage and our cultural identity here in New Orleans.
Well, Vatican, I've always heard this great debate between Mobile and New Orleans. Like, Mobile likes to say they're the first ones that actually had Mardi Gras, and New Orleans says that, you know, that they are. Can you clarify that?
Actually, it's funny that you use that word, because in both cases, it is literally a matter of clarification in order to justify their claims. Both of them are right, and both of them are wrong. The first Mardi Gras celebrations happened on March the 3rd, 1699, when Sieur de Bienville landed at what was then called Pointe du Mardi Gras, nearby modern-day Dauphin Island in Alabama.
Oh, okay.
Modern Mardi Gras has been celebrated in New Orleans, ancient Mardi Gras has been celebrated in New Orleans in some shape or form since the city was incorporated in 1719. Now, it is true that Mobile does have its own Mardi Gras celebrations, but their Mardi Gras celebrations, the advent of what is now their modern Mardi Gras, happened after the advent of Comus here in New Orleans in 1857. The reason why Alabama takes credit is because the members of Comus were all members of a crew in a Mobile called the Cowbellion de Rakin. And it was a parade that took place on New Year's Day for many, many years in Mobile. Those members from the Cowbellion de Rakin eventually moved into New Orleans in the mid-1800s. And the young men who created the Crew of Comus lamented the days of marching with the Cowbellion de Rakin, and since they were all businessmen and civic leaders, they also remembered all of the tourism that the Cowbellion de Rakin parade would pull into the city. It was with this knowledge of tourism and with their history of parading that they created the Crew of Comus. And the first modern Mardi Gras parade happened on February the 24th of 1857, and that Mardi Gras parade was put together in just under a month.
Wow. Now, is it true, isn't Comus and Momus, that the identity of the king and the crew members are never known? They never released to the public?
Not the crew members, but the royalty themselves, the kings of both. And remember, Momus is not, there is a king of Momus, but Comus is not a king. Comus is a god.
Oh.
So the identity of Comus is never revealed. The identity of the king of Momus was never revealed. Momus no longer exists now. And the parading members of the Crew of Comus left when Comus left the parading schedule in 1992. Those members who wanted to continue to parade, along with some of the members of the old Crew of Momus, got together and formed the crews of Chaos and the Crew d'Etat, so that they could continue to march.
And I mean that. I mean, for those hierarchy crews, I mean, it costs. I mean, to be able to get in, you have to be extremely highly recognized in, you know, leadership in the city and respected leaders.
Yes, and it's not that you have to be. It's just that most of them happen to be. The membership in the old line crews, and those were the crews that decided not to march after the 1992 Fair Rider Ordinance that was passed by a lady here named Dorothy May Taylor, which required that every parade be open, every parade that rolls in Orleans Parish must be open to free and open membership. Well, the crew system in New Orleans didn't start that way. The crew system began as a series of like-minded individuals who had their own club. That was the way that COMAS began. The members of the original members of COMAS were very carefully selected from amongst all of the leading young men in the city in 1856 and 1857. The crew system operated this way for well over 100 years. It wasn't until the advent of the crew of Bacchus as the first super crew in 1969 that a crew offered open membership across the board.
And
before that time, all the other crews, they were closed organizations. And that's how Mardi Gras actually grew. Because those organizations were closed to so many people, a lot of Orleanians said, fine, you don't want to play with me? I'll go over here and start my own crew and we'll march on our own. So there to you, buddy.
And also, isn't it like in the very early times, to present the young women as maids, that was almost like their debut to society.
Oh, yes, completely. Any young lady who was not presented at the Momus Ball, the Comus Ball, the Rex Ball, was no, or even the smaller crews, that was how the debutantes were presented in New Orleans. That was their coming out ball. And because of that, the tradition of the call-out was invented. When young ladies, young debutantes would go to the balls, gentlemen would sign their books for dances at different times throughout the evening. And once your call-out book was filled, then you spent the rest of the evening dancing with your inamoratas.
And
young
Vatican,
ladies could dance with 10 to 12 men in a night.
You give me chills because, I mean, I remember going back to all that. And, I mean, it was because you didn't know who the masked man was for the call out. You were dancing.
And that was part of the mystery.
Yes. I mean, it was fabulous. Well, we're getting ready to go to break, and I have a few more questions if you don't mind staying with
me. Of course. I'm happy to do so. I love nothing more than to talk about Mardi Gras and Carnival.
Oh, you have such a great repertoire and history of it. I could sit here and talk to you for days. So when we come back from break, we'll continue. Thanks, Vatican.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world. Join us every week for Paper Hope Next Generation. This is a program for all women, regardless of age, who want to connect and start having real conversations about tough subjects. None of our topics are off the table. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics that impact women with specific focus on relationships, family, community, and self. Join Paper Hope Next Generation live every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Hope that you will be a part of the conversation.
Get ready to experience a more fulfilling lifestyle. Tune in to Direct Connect Empowerment with host Fee Mazanke. The show will feature guests who have changed their lives by using the Direct Connect coaching program or have worked with the same concepts that this program offers. By hearing how others have been transformed, you will be inspired to move forward. Direct Connect Empowerment with Fee Mazanke can be heard live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, y'all. We have some locals here from New Orleans, and I have Vatican Loki, who's just been an encyclopedia, of information on Mardi Gras and the history and the customs and the traditions, which we had several callers email in wanting some answers. And
certainly. An encyclopedia. My new name is Funk and Wagnall.
And I love this, but before we go to the next email question, I have a few more questions for you. And
of course.
What is this, being from New Orleans and also a past queen, I'm not familiar with the crew of Ferrette.
The crew of Ferrette. They are just wonderful. And this is a good example of what we were just talking about before the break, with crews not being able to, people not being able to get into other riding crews and deciding to form their own crew. The crew of Ferrette, led by Captain Bobby Schwartzberg, has really made a splash here locally on the parade scene. They are a brand new crew, and they are the only new crew that will appear in Orleans Parish for many years. They just changed the ordinance now that from here on out, they only want to have 30 parades in Orleans Parish. Currently, there are 34. If any of those parades cannot march at any time from here on out, those parades will be lost. They will not be able to get a new permit to parade.
Well, wait, what
until
is,
the number gets down below 30.
What's the reasoning behind that? I don't understand.
The reasoning that the city has put forward is due to a reduced police presence in the city. We do have a law enforcement dearth that is happening here in New Orleans post-Katrina, still having it, in fact. And it's very difficult for the local police department to keep up with all of the parades that are currently on the schedule. They would like to reduce it from 34 down to 30. Via natural attrition, not actually going and telling crews, okay, you can't march. But if a crew does come upon some hard financial times and cannot make the responsibilities of their parade for the coming year, if they're over the 30 number limit, those parades will not be allowed to come back onto the schedule.
Wow. And I have Celine on the line, too. She's also, I'm not sure if people know about her wonderful parade, the Crew of Muses.
It's one of Professor Carl Nevall's absolute favorite parades. He never misses it.
Well, rightfully so, because we've got good throws and we have a good time. And I think, like you were saying with Crew of Ferrette, Crew of Muses, I think, sort of started the same way of, you know, like people couldn't get into a different crew, and so this Stacey Rosenberg started and said, I'm going to start my own all-female crew. And now they have too many people and they're letting
crew
closed off.
I agree. It's good that you mentioned the Crew of Muses, Celine, because I believe one of the email questions concerned how Mardi Gras has changed since Katrina.
That was actually my next question. Yep.
And so, Katrina the Crew of Muses is an excellent example of how Mardi Gras has moved into the 21st century. And listen to me, I'm saying Mardi Gras, I mean carnival. Oh, let's make that delineation right now. Carnival is the season. Mardi Gras is the day. Mardi Gras is the last day of carnival. But the way that the Crew of Muses has transformed what the modern super crew in the 21st century carnival in New Orleans does has been astounding. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Solane, the Crew of Muses began in 2000, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Right. So they were one of the first, super crews to actually get back up on their feet following Katrina. And their commitment to Orleans Parish and their commitment to the city of New Orleans and to Carnival and Mardi Gras in the city was astounding. They came back right after Katrina. They had to reduce the parade, but they continued to march. They continued to shower all of their people on the parade route with as many throws as they could possibly throw. They invest so much into the educational infrastructure within the city, with arts education, with education in general, and with all of the public works that they do. The Crew of Muses is one of those super crews that really sets the bar and, you know, puts up the standard by which other crews and other super crews should and will eventually follow.
And what I love, Vatican and Celine, I think it's the most unique since it's an all-female organization. To explain how through the year you collect, you know, all the high heel platforms, heels, and how you give away.
I'm in my living room. I'm looking at five Muses heels right now in my
playcase. I'm jealous.
They are like Zulu coconuts. If you can get a shoe from Muses and a Zulu coconut, you've had a really good carnival.
You got it made. You got it made.
You truly do.
Like you said, I mean, it's very rare to get a shoe from Muses. Plus, they have the most unique. They throw like makeup brushes. I mean, it's just like the coolest thing.
They try to come up with new things every year. Yeah.
They are a female-centric crew, which is why Professor Carl Duvall has never gotten to ride with them, because they are all females and the professor is not. It's one of those few times the professor wishes that he was female.
Now Vatican, I got to tell you this. It was back in the early 70s, okay? You know about the Zulu organization. That was strictly African-American social organization club. Well, white people weren't allowed to ride at this time, obviously that was.
Oh yeah, at the time when the crew originally began in 1919, it was a mixture of both white and black riders, as it is today. And the reason for the Zulu blackface that has come under fire from so many years, which they have managed to keep and still use, is that was how black and white riders could ride together in the same parade. If everyone was wearing the blackface, you really couldn't tell who was white and who was black.
That was true because, I mean, I was able to ride. I had, you know, it was the most exciting thing. But when we had our champagne breakfast, we were on North Rampart at 5:30 in the morning with Jack Daniels and donuts, and that was our champagne breakfast. And we had the wildest time. I mean
New Orleans history. I can well imagine.
New Orleans history and carnival. So what would you say to a newbie or somebody that might have a family and scared that, you know, that it might be too wild? I mean, what would be some of your, you know, your top suggestions?
Excellent question. Let's start with the family question first. If you truly do feel, now, and you must remember, the word carnival itself means farewell to flesh. It is, in the Catholic Church calendar, in the Christian calendar, it is the last great hurrah for all of the vices, all of the things that, you know, are supposedly bad for you before the penitential season of Lent, where you give all of that up. And listen, if I'm not mistaken, I never get the numbers right on this, it's either 46 or 47 days minus Sundays after Mardi Gras that Easter arrives.
I thought it was like 40 days after Lent. I mean, 40 days after the season opens.
But there's a lot more strictures. The reason, you know, Mardi Gras and Lent are what are called movable feasts in the church, which means that they happen at a certain time period, not on a specific day. And they have mathematicians in the Vatican, the Vatican, not this Vatican, but the Vatican, right now, who are, because there's not enough room in this Vatican. I can maybe seat two at best. But they have an entire room of mathematicians at the Holy See whose sole job it is throughout their entire lives to figure out all of the dates of all of the movable feasts all the way through till the end of time. Wow. And it's a very difficult process because it follows the Druidic lunar calendar. And you have to know a great deal about mathematics. You must have a slide rule and a druid if you can find one.
Yeah, do you go on Google looking for a druid?
I'm guessing you go down for druids for less. I'm thinking that's the place to pick one up. You know, well, so maybe a druid hanging out in front of your local Home Depot. Go ask.
Well, Vatican, thank you. I love listening to you. How can people get in touch with you if they want to know some more information or see you for the Mardi Gras?
Well, You can contact me on Facebook. You can either go to my fan page, which is Vatican Loki, spelled just the way it sounds. L-O-K-E-Y is the last name. You can also find Professor Carl Naval on Facebook and on Twitter and Google+. Just type in Professor Carl, C-A-R-L, Naval, N-I-V-A-L-E, into your search engine, and it'll bring you exactly to where you want to be.
Well, you sure enlightened everybody and made it a fun time. Thank you so much for being our guest, Vatican. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, Suzanne. Thank you, Solane, and thank you, everyone listening. Goodbye.
Okay. All right. Thank Bye-bye. You.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.
Voice America.